morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington. Today is Tuesday, February the 8th, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you this morning. Opposition legislators in Uganda say they are boycotting parliament to protest what they say is an increase in cases of human rights abuse in the country.
Myself and colleagues on this side have brought to the attention of this House and the country matters pertaining to disappearance of citizens, detention without trial, including our members of parliament, the Honorable Sewanyana and the Honorable Segirinya.
The Senegalese Football Federation officially presents the AFCON trophy today to President Macky Sall in the capital, Dakar.
Then this victory is so important, not only for the effort we have, but it is important because the nation, the population.
And the government of Nigeria has received 2 million doses of Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine from Finland, Greece, and Slovenia. We'll have these stories and more coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. Stay tuned. And for our top story, a satirical author arrested in Uganda for insulting the son of President Yoweri Museveni has been denied permission to travel abroad. The writer had hoped to visit Germany to pick up an award and receive medical treatment for torture he allegedly received in prison. Halima Atumani reports from Kampala.
Appearing in a Kampala courtroom Monday afternoon, author Kakwenza Rukirabashaija hoped the magistrate would ease some of his bail conditions. Kakwenza, through his lawyer, was seeking release of his passport and also asked that his case be moved to the High Court for trial. Kakwenza wants to travel to Germany to pick up a writing award and receives specialized treatment for torture he allegedly received in jail. But lawyer Aaron Kiza says all their requests were denied.
It jeopardizes the chances of our client to fight for his life and his health following the military torture in Entebbe. It's obvious since we started trying to expose his torture, they have been fighting it. So this is the latest attempt to shield the wrongdoing from scrutiny.
In December 2021, Kakwenza was arrested for offensive communication under Uganda's Computer Misuse Act. The author had written that the president's son, Lieutenant General Kainerugaba Muhoozi, was obese and bad-tempered. Muhoozi is seen as Museveni's possible successor at the next election in 2026. Kakwenza was detained for a month, and for part of that time, he was held by the military at an unidentified location where he was reportedly tortured. Kakwenza has said he was severely beaten and made to dance through the day and night with few hours of sleep. He said his captors also used a pair of pliers to pluck flesh from his thighs. Photos of his body published in local media show torture marks on his back, thighs, and hands. After the release of the images on social media last week, the US and EU called for the prosecution of security personnel involved in torture. Ugandan officials have not commented on the claims. However, the magistrate ruled that Kakwenza has no serious illness to warrant specialized treatment in Europe and said his medical condition can be handled in Uganda. The magistrate also stated that Kakwenza does not need to visit Germany to receive his award, and this can be done online. He also turned down the request to move the writer's case to the High Court. Kakwenza's trial is now set to begin on March 23rd. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala, Uganda.
And still in Uganda, legislators are boycotting parliament for 2 weeks in protest of what they say is an increase in cases of human rights abuse in the country. They want the government to stop the abuses and arrest those involved in torturing Ugandans. Reporter Mugume Davis Rwakarinji has more from Kampala.
Right, Honourable Speaker, I'll return to the House in 2 weeks as a protest with a motion. Thank you, Right, Honourable Speaker.
On Thursday last week, Mathias Mpuuga, Uganda's leader of opposition, led opposition members of parliament to walk out in protest of what they said is an increase in gross violation of human rights in the country. Mpuuga said, as people's representatives, MPs cannot continue to look on as their freedoms are abused.
On several occasions, myself and colleagues on this side have brought to the attention of this House and the country matters pertaining to disappearance of citizens, detention without trial, including our members of parliament, the Honorable Sewanyana and the Honorable Segirinya, extrajudicial killings by the state apparatus, including the latest version of all manner of torture.
One of the latest abuse was on award-winning novelist Kakwenza Ruchirabasheja, who was allegedly tortured when in detention. His torment attracted condemnation from both local and international rights defenders, including the U.S. mission in Kampala. Rights lawyer and parliamentarian Asuman Basarerwa calls it, in two quotes, unfortunate.
The issue of human rights violations has been highlighted before in parliament. We even presented the names and contacts of victims of human rights violations, those who have been arrested, those who are missing, and their families. And the government promised to take action, but since then nothing has happened. We thought that perhaps we could send another signal to government, because the situation gets worse every day.
He claims many opposition supporters are targeted.
You can imagine people being detained in ungazetted detention facilities. It's unconstitutional. People being tortured is unconstitutional. People being arrested without evidence. You know, Ugandans are being arrested without evidence. They are remanded 5 years, 7 years. Each time they appear in court, they are told investigations are ongoing.
Chris Variomunsi, Uganda government spokesperson, denies the opposition allegations.
Whoever has been arrested, I want to believe, has been arrested because there is suspicion that person has committed a crime, and then he or she has to be arraigned through the courts of law.
Basarewa says the opposition will use other avenues, such as courts of law, to ensure that those who torture Ugandans are brought to book. For VOA News, I am Gume Davis Rwakarinji, Kampala, Uganda.
Let's go to West Africa in Senegal, where the Senegalese Football Federation says that representatives of the organization and players of the national team that won the Africa Nations Cup, that's AFCON, will officially present the trophy to President Macky Sall in the capital, Dakar, Tuesday. The Senegalese team, called the Lions of Teranga, was crowned African champions on Sunday. They defeated the Pharaohs of Egypt in the final of the Africa Cup of Nations in Cameroon. President Macky Sall, who congratulated the team for the victory, cut short his trip abroad to return home to officially host the new African champions. Kara Thion is the spokesperson for the Senegalese Football Federation. He tells VOA's Peter Cloti that being crowned African champions is a significant achievement that will unite the entire West African country.
This victory is so important, not only for the effort we have put on it, but it is important because the nation, the population, wanted this victory. They are very enthusiastic. We can even say that they need it more than we do.
Wow.
So
wow.
You see somehow the importance of this victory.
President declared Monday a public holiday for Senegal, and he is hosting the team on Tuesday. How excited is the FA and the soccer players to be welcomed by the president first and then meeting them again on Tuesday?
Very excited. You see, this is one more reason to show that sports unify, actually. It unifies. When you have a country that is divided, only sports, among other things, can unify it. So we are very excited to be hosted by the president. Even if he did not host us, we would be so happy. The fact of bringing this trophy here, showing it to the whole nation, really is very positive for us.
The coach, some people credit him for uniting the team and making the boys stay together and hungry. He was also a former player. How important is the signal of his choice to remain the coach of the team? Some people in Senegal are telling me that the FA did the right thing by sticking with him. Talk to me about the decision to maintain him as the coach.
Yeah, it is a long story. He has been there for 6 years. And if a coach stays in office for 6 years, it means that he has done something. In general, when things do not work, the coach leaves. he is the one who will leave first. But if the coach has been here for nearly seven years now, it means that at the grassroots he has done something great. He has worked first on having the unity, no discrimination, having been very strict as well. Because you can, when you are leading young boys, you have to be tender, but you have to be strict as well, which means that he is a good manager. So his management wouldn't be in favor of some distractors, some people whom this management does not fit, will have the tendency to criticize. But he has been doing a very strict management and a very nice thing as well, because he is friendly to all players. He knows all the players and he respects them, they respect him. When you see us together, you will think that, well, these are brothers, elder brothers and younger brothers, or nephew, uncle, things like from the same family.
That was spokesperson for the Senegalese Football Federation, Kara Thion. He was speaking to VOA's Peter Clotty. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. The right to education in Zimbabwe is under threat as public school teachers threaten to stay away until the government raises salaries. They say inflation and the payment of their salaries in lower value Zimbabwean dollars makes it nearly impossible to survive. From Harare, Rutendo Muwere has this report.
The government converted the salaries of public school teachers from $540 per month into local Zimbabwe dollars in October 2018. This at a time when one US dollar is trading at between 200 to 240 Zimbabwean dollars. Teachers say their wages have been eroded by high inflation and want authorities to revert to paying salaries using American currency. Negotiations with the government are done on an ad hoc basis, and they received a small raise in October last year. But with conditions deteriorating, teachers say they are forced to negotiate monthly. Despite the stalemate over salaries between Zimbabwe public school teachers, government has announced that schools open this week. Teachers' unions have written to authorities saying that they will not report for duty unless there's an improvement in their working and living conditions. Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe president, Obed Masaraure, says the right to education for the poor is under threat. He blames this on the failure by government to provide adequate salaries for its employees.
The teachers are not going back to work, not that they don't want to be in the classroom, but it was the socioeconomic realities won't allow them, just because these teachers are earning less than $100 at a time where rent was for just three rooms are up to $150. So teachers can't afford even basic accommodation, food, transport, or even drinking water. It would be the greatest betrayal to see a teacher leaving their own children at home and walking into a classroom to teach other people's children. It's very unfortunate that the government of the day has failed to assume its constitutional mandate. They failed to fund education. They failed to pay teachers. Even if the teachers were going to make it to the classroom, even then also are failing to make it out because of poverty. So government should be availing funds to provide state-funded education.
Masaraure says students are already behind because of the COVID-19 induced school closures, and that the absence of teachers in the classroom will worsen an already bad situation.
It's very unfortunate that the generation is lost. Some are going to be engaging in child marriage, drugs, among other ills, if the government choose not to step up and provide education.
Munyaradzi Majoni is the Secretary General for the Zimbabwe National Union of School Heads.
Heads and deputy heads love their country. We love our work. It's the only job we have. Unfortunately, we no longer have the capacity to be at work. Heads and deputy heads from across the 10 provinces are telling us that they can no longer afford to be at work, as well as to carry out the duties expected of them, until and unless their employer empowers them to do so by restoring their remuneration to pre-October 2018 levels and in real US dollar terms. We can no longer afford these services that we offer, even for our own children.
Riki Chinodawafa is a parent of three children in public schools. He says the poor are bearing the brunt of the failure by government to put its house in order.
It is us with children in public schools who suffer from the stalemate between government and teachers. While children in private school have been doing online lessons, our children have not been doing anything. Now that COVID has gone down and schools are opening, the children will not be learning, teachers will not be there, and they have genuine reasons, even if they come to class, they are disgruntled to fully deliver on their mandate.
Child rights advocate Anna Jo shares her view.
As it is, the school calendar is already behind, and I feel if any action should be taken, it should be that of ensuring that the right to education of pupils is met.
The government has not commented on the threats by the teachers' unions. VOA was also not able to reach the Director of Communications and Advocates in the Ministry of Primary and Secondary Education of Zimbabwe, Taunga Nandoro. For VOA, this is Rutendo Mawere in Harare.
And still in Southern Africa, as efforts to assess the impact of last month's tropical storm Anna in Malawi continue, the country's only power company says that it lost about a third of its generating capacity to the storm. Meanwhile, the government has appealed to donors to contribute toward the cost of rehabilitating the station, which it says it can't afford to repair on its own. Lamek Masina reports from Chikwawa District.
Officials at the electricity generation company Ejenko says Malawi has lost about 130 megawatts following the shutdown of its Kabijila power station in the Chikwawa district due to last month's tropical storm Anna. William Liabunya is Ejenko's chief executive officer.
We have lost the dam here because the control mechanism that we had to take the water to the intake of the machines has been destroyed. We had the training dike and that has been washed away. And on the dam wall, you have seen that now water is passing through the dam wall, and therefore we cannot hold any water at the dam, and through that we cannot generate any electricity.
Ejenko operates four hydropower stations in Malawi: Nkula, Tedzani, Kabijila, and Ovwe, according to its website. The company also operates thermal and solar power plants. Overall, it has a total installation generation capacity of over 440 megawatts, with about 390 of it from hydropower plants, and about 50 megawatts are from thermal power plants. The damage at Kabijila has cost the company 30% of the total hydropower generation. Liabunya says plans are underway to construct temporary structures to help bring power back, but he said he was not certain how soon that would be.
We have just consulted an expert to look at this issue. In our own resource in the company, we have looked at it, and we are saying that for the temporary structure that we want to put and to quickly put up, restore the power generation, we're looking at 6 months as the time that we require, but that is to be verified by the consultant as he finishes the expert analysis of the work.
And the storm also killed at least 90 people in Madagascar, Mozambique, and Malawi. The Department of Disaster Management Affairs says in Malawi, the storm killed 32 people and displaced 188,000 from their homes in 17 districts. Meanwhile, donor partners and well-wishers, including United Nations agencies in Malawi, have started providing aid to victims. Malawi's Minister of Energy, Ibrahim Matola, is appealing to donors for help in rehabilitating the power station.
These works cannot be done only with our local peers, because we are so exhausted with the other related issues. However, I would like to call upon the international community, World Bank, IMF, European Union, the Britain, the Americans, to come and assist us.
Matola says Malawi would need about $23 million for the temporary rehabilitation of the damaged Kabijila power station. In the meantime, some businesses in affected areas have closed temporarily, while others are using gasoline-powered generators. Lameck Masina for VOA News, Chikwawa, Malawi.
A Nigerian company says that three people are dead and four remain missing after one of its ships exploded and sank off the coast last week. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
The top official of the Sheba Exploration and Production Company, Ikemi Funaokafo, confirmed the three fatalities from the explosion of the Trinity Spirit, adding that three survivors were found. He said the company's priority is to ensure the safe return of four crew members who are yet to be accounted for. The giant oil vessel, which was capable of carrying 2 million barrels of oil, exploded and sank last week off the coast of Warri in southern Delta State. Nigeria's environment minister on Saturday said the ship was carrying about 60,000 barrels, far below its maximum capacity. Energy experts like Odion Omonfoman say the incident raises environmental concerns.
There'll be massive environmental pollution there. I'm hoping that a lot of the barrels got burned when the ship caught fire. But even at that, it's a massive oil spill that we have in our hands.
No one knows the extent of the environmental damage caused to the coastal area. Local coast guards say the wrecked ship was partly submerged. An aerial image from the European Space Agency shows the oil spill stretching for several kilometers across the surface of the water. The Nigerian government's Oil Spill Detection and Response Agency is investigating. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
And still in Nigeria, the government has received 2 million doses of Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine from Finland, Greece and Slovenia, with more EU donations set to arrive in the coming weeks. Government officials said that delivery is part of a pledge by the European Union to African countries through the COVAX initiative launched by the World Health Organization in 2020 to distribute vaccines to developing countries. And for our final story, the government of Mali is calling on the West African Economic and Monetary Union to lift sanctions on the country, saying that they will have severe consequences for the population. West Africa's 15-nation ECOWAS bloc and the West African Economic and Monetary Union both imposed sanctions on Mali on January the 9th after the military junta that first seized power in a 2020 coup decided to delay a national election. And that's it for this edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voanews.com. And remember to connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Twitter, Instagram, and on YouTube, where you can watch our videos. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a great week ahead.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kHz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kHz, 19.2 meter band.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to Ndombolo and Makossa to Kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.